Today's address and musical contributions have a few things in common. Deep spirituality from agnostic places, war and peace, memory and nostalgia. I first brought you an address titled Sacred Listening 3 years ago, and it has become an annual event for me anyway. And today I wish to share some more thoughts on the subject of sacred listening, the act of listening as a spiritual practice. For me, sacred listening, particularly to music, can be a number of things. It can be revelation, prayer, meditation, or encounter. But listening is not just of the ears. If I closed my eyes while hearing you speak, as a hearing person, I will miss much. I will not know how your body is speaking, your expressions or movement. For body language reveals more than words alone. That is a particular gift of those who cannot hear. For listening is taking in the light of your eyes, the lines on your face, and the subtle movements of your limbs. Those of us with the gift of hearing with our ears should also pay attention to the language the body is revealing to us. And what of silence? Listening for the unheard. That is perhaps where sound acquires meaning. This is where listening becomes an act of respect and generosity. It is when I am silent so you can speak. When I wish to share with you a story, a disclosure, a heartfelt emotion, I do need you to listen and not eclipse me. Our reflection on the parable of the sower. Often when someone shares something with us in words, I may find myself eager to tell you my story, but I might just stay quiet and listen to you. So sacred listening is the practice of receiving sound or another person with full attention, openness, and reverence, allowing the sound or the other to become a doorway to presence, to community, to transcendence even, and the encounter of what lies beyond ordinary hearing. And so to our first piece of music. Ralph Vaughan Williams' wife said of him, he was an atheist, but later drifted into cheerful agnosticism. Like so many composers before and after, Vaughan Williams was not particularly religious, despite writing some of the most beautiful music for Christian liturgy. His father was a clergyman, and his great uncle was Charles Darwin. It is said of Vaughan Williams that he developed a deep reverence for the divine, finding profound spiritual meaning in nature. And it was on the eve of World War I that Williams wrote The Lark Ascending. At the time, one reviewer, on hearing it, said, it seems to reflect nostalgia for a partly mythological lost age of innocence. But it is more. It's an ode to a pastoral world that the imminent horrors of the global conflict would destroy. It is a very real expression of dread for what was coming. Incidentally, Vaughan Williams spent 2 years as a stretcher bearer on the front line of the war.
Thank you.
We move now to the dawn of the next great war, World War II. Sibelius, the writer of our much beloved hymn 159, "This Is My Song," first wrote Andante Festivo in 1922, and he later expanded it in the 30s. And it became a reflection on the impending darkness of the Second World War, described as an emotional balm in a world about to be torn again by war. It's not a nostalgic harking back to a better time. And he conducted its first performance on the eve of the war, and he urged his players to play with more humanity. In the year 2000, as the world said farewell to the most war-torn and destructive century in human history, Carl Jenkins wrote The Armed Man, A Mass for Peace, and he dedicated it to the victims of the Kosovo conflict. It draws on the texts and ideas of diverse religious and musical traditions. We hear elements from the Latin Mass, from the Hindu scriptures. We hear the Muslim call to prayer together with secular poetry from England and Japan. Jenkins described his music as providing spiritual music for secular people, offering audiences a space for comfort and reflection, regardless of their religious affiliations. Jenkins is deeply concerned about the world's current parlous state, meaning full of danger, risk, or uncertainty. Jenkins is concerned about humanity's long search for a form of happiness and fulfillment beyond dogmas and creeds, and the Hebraic duty of tikkun olam, the task of repairing the world by attending to its hurts and its injustices. And this is something I think our Unitarian spirit understands. The Armed Man essentially asks for divine mercy and redemption, a final healing in a universal afterlife, more mysterious and more capacious than the traditional heaven of the chosen and the blessed. Jenkins said that this work was his contribution to the universal cry for peace. And so to each according to their gift, and Jenkins' gift is to bring this powerful music into being. The Armed Man ends with a piece entitled "Better is Peace," and he uses words from the book of Revelation. "God shall wipe away all tears, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, and there shall be no more pain." I am inclined to think that while we may have been told in the Christian scriptures that God shall wipe away all tears and intervene and smite the enemies of peace, my Unitarian soul believes that it is up to humanity to bring peace, and that God, however you understand God, is revealed in our inherent goodness and our ability to end war and destruction. Divine and sacred indeed is our desire to live in peace.
Amen.
Rebecca Dale is a young composer from the UK. She wrote Materna Requiem in memory of her mother who died from cancer in 2010. And in it she weaves in melodies written when Dale was just a teenager and which her mother would have heard. A profound and truly beautiful gift. She wrote Materna Requiem 8 years after her mother died. She says about her music that a song or a piece of music is something that can be a frozen place in time. It offers the listener the capacity to time travel. Remembering, not nostalgia. And often a piece brings you right back to that place of joy or that place of pain. Music indeed carries memory. It evokes experiences long forgotten. So see where this sound brings you. It is Paradisum Interlude. Giorni translates as the days, and it was composed by Italian pianist Ludovico Einaudi. And it's really a reflection on the passage of time, capturing the feeling of looking back on memories and cherishing moments of the past. He was inspired to write this piece by a 12th century folk song that originated in Mali. The song describes the killing of a beloved hippopotamus by a hunter, which led to a long communal period of mourning and lamentation. And if you listen closely, you'll hear the pianist's left hand playing an arpeggio. An arpeggio is where the notes of a chord are played individually in rapid succession rather than all at the same time. It's a repetitive, swaying left-hand sequence designed to simulate a feeling of walking, of meditating, and softly mourning the passage of time. Thank you. finally to another war, the war to reverse that most existential threat to our earthly home, climate change. David Attenborough has dedicated his life to bringing the beauty and diversity of Earth's ecosystems into our lives. He has stated again and again that human activity has pushed Earth past its stable climate boundaries, risking irreversible damage to global ecosystems. He emphasizes that protecting wildlife and restoring natural habitats is as vital to fighting climate change as reducing carbon emissions. Now, if you've watched Blue Planet, a key character in all of those programs is the soundtrack. Attenborough says, "We have come as far as we have because we are the cleverest creatures to have ever lived on Earth. But if we are to continue to exist, we will require more than intelligence. We will require wisdom." David himself describes himself as an agnostic. He believes human beings may simply lack the sensory organs to perceive a higher power or greater influence in the universe. So this is the opening music to Blue Planet 2, written by Hans Zimmer, Jacob Shea, and David Fleming.